Anyway, that's enough of that. Hello, welcome to the Home for Anime. I'm your host, GPC, great podcaster Callie, and well, I usually have some sort of intricate thing laid out, but welcome, Mel, from from It's Annie Mel. Did I get that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness. So how's it going?
I mean, I'm doing pretty good. I can't really complain. We're in the middle of summer. It's warm outside. I tend to always enjoy the warm weather, not too humid. So I gotta say, I'm doing pretty swell. How are you?
So this is very on topic, but it's just where I have to start because this is where my head and my heart have been all day. I finished the Wano Country arc in One Piece last night in the manga. I am absolutely enamored with Horselina.
Oh, yeah. She really grows on you. Like, at first I was like, this is a really weird design, Oda. Where are we going with this? And what are we doing with her character? And then Tama gives her the Kibidango, and then she turns into some major supporting character throughout the entire, like, Onigashima arc of Wano. Yeah.
And now she's like a mom?
Yeah. Kinda.
I loved her and Tama's interactions so much. I thought they were just the perfect little people. But anyway, that brings me to what we're talking about today. A while ago, I stumbled upon a video on YouTube from Melon Tea, and it was about how Oda writes women in One Piece. I thought it was an interesting topic, especially given that Volume 5 is about cool girls doing cool things, because really, all of the women in One Piece are really cool.
They are. Very cool. They're all very fun. Lots of different designs, lots of different outfits, and just each of them bring a different dynamic.
And for some reason, it weirds me out that I think there are a lot of critics towards Oda for quote-unquote misogyny based on how he draws the characters without actually looking at the text and the depth behind said characters. What do they say? Big titties, big personalities.
I mean, for the most part, can we say that about Rebecca from Dressrosa? I understand why she is one of the most scantily clad characters in all of One Piece, just due to the oppression and Doflamingo basically trying to humiliate her. I get the context behind that. Then at the same time, it's like, Oda, did we really have to do this to her?
To which Oda would probably say, probably not, but I did it because I write One Piece. I can do whatever I want. Pretty much. No holds barred. And Oda is like, I just want to draw big titty women and this little guy with a scar on his chest having an adventure with his little hat.
I mean, yes. I think One Piece probably got way out of control. I don't think Oda expected it to go this far. And the further that we go along, and I'm sure you've noticed as you were reading Wano and are about to enter Egghead or have entered Egghead, the gags have become more outrageous. They're more consistent. And at some point, I think Oda was just like, you know, we're just going to make this really fun, really wacky, really goofy. And Gear 5 was born. So for the most part, yeah, he does whatever he wants and we enjoy it. We eat it up. And that's what makes One Piece so enjoyable.
But at the same time, like, he does all of this. He makes everything so goofy. And then he has these wonderful characters. And really, I'd have to say that my favorite out of all of them is Perona. But I know that's not the appropriate place to start. I know that the preferable way that people start this is by talking about either Nami or Nico Robin. It took me a really long time to actually start liking Nami.
I can understand that. She's a character that's a little bit hard to grow on, especially in the beginning. I think that, like, her story arc when they go to her island and save her was a moment where you start to feel, like, fondness for her just because she has, like, all this depth to her. But obviously, it kind of goes back and forth because sometimes we get, like, a lot of Nami time. Other times, we don't get as much Nami time. I feel like we didn't get a lot of Nami time in Wano. She was there. She was present. She had her battles and her fights. But it felt like Oda kind of shelved her in Wano and shelved Usopp in Wano. But she has her moments. She definitely comes through where she's very charismatic. What makes Nami so charming sometimes is that she has this very mischievous side to her. But then at the same time, she keeps the group in check, more specifically Luffy, because it seems like nobody can tell Luffy what to do but Nami.
This is true. Honestly, the thing that I think I resonated with me the most about Nami, I really appreciated the gold digger side of her. As someone whose goal in life is just to be taken care of and to have a lot of money, I got it. Also, our thieving skills are like neck and neck.
I would say she's just a really good hustler, you know?
Honestly, yes.
She's just a really good hustler. She knows how to play the game. She knows how to play people. And her skills in that regard are top-notch, exceptional.
But what really made me like her, really it was in Dressrosa. I mean, I thought she was okay, you know, like I was going back and forth, but then we get to Dressrosa and all she can do is think, I have to help these giant children in the biscuits room, which has no biscuits. There were no biscuits in the biscuits room, Mel.
I think that was just a room where they kept the kids in. Yeah, Punk Hazard was a really, like, good moment for that. Dressrosa, she wasn't there because the whole Doflamingo split up.
Right. No. I was thinking about, like, sagas for some reason. That's how I've been dividing all of them.
Oh, you're splitting it into sagas.
That's how I've been doing it in my head this whole time.
I can never remember the saga names. It's really easy for me to say it by the arc. So I'm like, Dressrosa? Dressrosa? Is it Dressrosa? But it is the Dressrosa saga.
Right.
Yikes. That's a really big saga when you really think about it.
It was very, very long.
Yeah, so I can really see that with Nami and Punk Hazard. She really, like, stepped up to the plate and you saw, like, a kind of more maternal side to her. I think there may have been hints of that throughout One Piece as a whole, maybe even before that, but I think that was one of her more distinct defining moments, the way that she kind of steps up and defends these kids and tries to aid them in hopes that they would get, you know, better and cured.
But see, this actually, I think, is a testament to how great Oda's writing is and where I think the whole misogyny thing is kind of shattered to an extent. And I think Melon might have talked about this, I'm not sure, but I've noticed this. Someone once said that it was her influence all the way back from when she was a kid with, is it Belle Mare? Remember her adoptive mom?
Yes, yes, yes.
So what I really love about, what I love about that dynamic, because when I was in, thank you, Punk Hazard, I was trying to start doing it by arcs instead of sagas. When I was in Punk Hazard, I'm like, she reminds me of her mom, how she's willing to go out of her way. But it's that concept of legacy, you know?
Yeah, like, inheriting one's will.
Right, like what Luffy was doing with Shanks.
Yeah.
And it's not just I'm meant to be a caretaker. It's I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stand up for what I think is right.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's passed a lot around in One Piece is the carrying of other people's wills. But there's a theory out there, it's not a spoiler, so I think I could say it. Mm-hmm. There's a theory out there that Nami is potentially a D, like Luffy. So if the, she truly does have a D, maybe there's a lot more credibility to her carrying Belmare's legacy and her will. One of the most fan favorites, because she's kind of an unofficial straw hat and considered part of the crew, is Vivi. I think everyone could kind of resonate with the fact that Vivi is one of the more interesting female characters that Oda has written, and wrote her very, very early on. So it kind of pays to a testament as to Oda's capability of writing female characters. I do think that sometimes he probably like creates a female character and will be like, all right, how do I want to design her? And perhaps the claims of misogyny, I'm going to play on the other side, comes with how he dresses some of these characters at times. Some people may feel not as fond about that, just because shonen action tend to be notoriously known for a lot of fan service when it comes to female characters, which can be a little bit distasteful at times depending on how it's used.
Yeah, I will say Robin's whole ass is out in Egghead. It's, I mean, I'm not upset about it, but I guess I can see why someone else would be.
I actually really like the Egghead outfits. They're really cute.
They are. Like, let it hang out, Robin, really. Oda, keep cooking. But back to the main topic. So, we do have two female Ds. Potentially three.
Three.
We have Vivi. We have Crocodile.
Oh, right. The whole theory that Crocodile...
Crocodile, yes. And now we have... Because I just realized Nami doesn't have a last name, does she?
Yes. No, we don't know. So I was thinking about that recently, actually. So of the Straw Hats, like, we just learned Sanji's last name in Whole Cake, right?
Right.
Of the Straw Hats, last names that we don't know are Nami, I maybe Brooke? I'm not sure about Brooke, but Nami. Because I thought about it. I thought about Frankie for a second, but then I was like, wait, Frankie's real name is not Frankie. It's Cutty Flam, so he does have a last name. So yes, Nami is the one, probably the only Straw Hat, maybe also Brooke, whose last names we don't know. And this is why it's heavily theorized that she's potentially a D. Obviously, she was adopted, so there's very little that we know about her childhood. I'm sure Belmare didn't know, and I don't know how it could get revealed in the storyline, because clearly Nami doesn't know.
Wait. Does that mean Usopp's first name is really God?
Actually, we don't know Usopp's last name either. You're right.
I think his last name is Usopp.
I mean, the fact that we don't know his dad's last name, Yasopp.
Deadbeat.
I mean, we're not here to talk about deadbeat dads. That's a completely different conversation in the universe of One Piece. But... yes, he doesn't have a last name either. But going back to Nami, she doesn't have a last name. We don't know if she's D. There's a strong potential and capability just based on a lot of the characteristics that she displays.
I can see it. That would actually be pretty neat. Actually, yeah, I like that.
Right?
I like that. That's a good one.
It's a very popular fan theory that is often floated around in like Reddit forums and on Twitter. So I've been seeing it for a few years now. But if she really was, it would probably be one of the coolest reveals for Nami's character that we could get in the entire story, because we still don't know a lot about her aside from like the island that she came from and her whole history of oppression with Arlong and her being adopted by Belmare.
I'm flip-flopping between Nami and Vivi, because Vivi, you're right, was a lot of fun. And I love coming into Egghead, how 2 years later, everyone is still so fond of her.
Yeah.
And I love the little callback that they did where Zoro's the only person who's trying to be reasonable about it, and everyone is just roasting.
Right, when they find out that she got kidnapped or that she's missing, yes, they all wanted to go back and look for her. And Zoro, you know, Zoro really is reasonable at times. He comes through when you really need him. But if you don't need him, he's usually drunk, asleep, working out, or lost.
Yes, they called him Green Mom, Green Kaido. It's just like when they called him Four Swords Style.
Four Swords?
Remember back in at the end of Alabasta?
I mean, Alabasta's, it's been such a long time since I watched Alabasta.
Fair
or
enough.
Read it.
Fair enough. But that was one of the disses that Luffy gave him at the end of Alabasta, because they wanted Vivi to come with them. And he was like, well, you should have dragged her ass with you if you wanted her to come with us so bad.
I mean, yeah, but you know what? Vivi, and I guess I'm going to wrap up my spiel on Vivi here. She really did that whole undercover thing. She tried to save the kingdom all on her own. And then she decided to stay back and lead her kingdom, help foster, grow them, allow them to repair after the war and the oppression under Crocodile. She really like owned up to her responsibility. She said, yes, I can be free. I can have fun. I'm like a young teenage woman, like, let me go out into the world with Luffy. But instead she said, nope, I'm gonna live up to my responsibilities for the country of Alabasta. I'm gonna be here, and Luffy, I'll see you someday.
Yes, she is a wonderful character. And since we're talking about undercover, I'm just gonna go non-binary here, because this is both a man and a woman as far as I'm concerned. Bonclay is whoever Bonclay wants to be, and he's the greatest character in all of One Piece.
Bonclay is fantastic.
Bonclay is a beautiful specimen, and I love Bonclay so much.
I mean, I don't think he's another character. Like, there's a few characters that people could probably rattle off all 10 fingers that no one hates them. Like, if you've read or watched One Piece, there is not a single soul that dislikes or hates them. And Bonclay is definitely one of them. Vivi is another.
Especially after Luffy's punch the shit out of her. I mean, she took that like a champion. You've got to be strong to take that gum fist right to the jaw.
I mean, yes, obviously you do. Luffy is quite powerful, isn't he?
He really is. But no, Bonclay, without having a single bit of red to complement the blue that is on their bodysuit, is a walking green flag of a human being.
He is. And I mean, he definitely is.
In the best way possible. But then, of course, we have Miss All Sunday, who is the best spy to ever spy in the history of spy undercover. Am I having an aneurysm right now? I don't know. Nico Robin is amazing.
I mean, she is. I am a full-on Nico Robin stan. I think I've always enjoyed her character ever since she joined the crew. She just popped up on the ship and she's like, let me join your crew. Obviously, the only person who was skeptical was Zoro. Everyone else was kind of on board with the idea. But the fact that she kept so much hidden under wraps until Water 7, where we start to get her backstory, that, like, Robin breaks so many layers in a human being when you see her backstory, Water 7, Enies Lobby, and then to see her come super far to where we are, and for her to get, like, the, what's the word that I'm looking for? The, I guess, the feats and the respect from Oda when she's fighting Black Maria. I felt like we really came like full circle. It was like the pinnacle of like Robin in Wano. And I think at that point, I'd always liked Robin, but at that point I was like, yeah, Robin is best girl. She's the best. She's my favorite. She can eat all of One Piece.
So there are two big things about Nico Robin. Have you ever played a Tomb Raider game?
It's been a really long time.
Doesn't she remind you of like a cooler Lara Croft?
Yes. Like, I can agree with that.
Have you ever thought about it that way?
Yes, with all like her archaeology knowledge and her being able to read the poneglyphs. Actually, yes, that's a really good parallel.
I just think that she's a way cooler Lara Croft, especially because she has allegiances. I mean, her time in Wano, especially when Sanji called for her and she immediately came and did that demon child thing, that
she owned up to, like, the name that they've been calling her all her life. And I was like, man, that's how you really take like negativity, and you make that your own power, your own strength.
That is, I have the power of the devil in anime on my side.
Yeah.
And I love her for it. Also, I saw Film Z, and I didn't realize that apparently that is her default eye color, and they only made it blue in the manga. I mean, not the manga, in the anime.
Yes.
So those brown eyes, I started the movie standing up. My knees buckled when I saw her.
Yes, Nico Robbins. That's why Nico Robbins' design also changed after the time skip. Apparently, they made a mistake. They thought that Nico Robin was supposed to look one way, but then after the time skip, they were like, all right, we gotta change this to what it's actually intended. But I do prefer the pre-time skip designs sometimes.
In the anime?
Yeah.
They took just about all the melanin away from her. And then, I mean, Oda was like, basically, she's inspired by a Russian, or she would be Russian if she were a human, or a human in the real world, which I can see that, because, I mean, also Black Widow from the Marvel universe, I see that from the initial her being a spy, so that those two just rang clear in my head. But then, of course, as we go on and on, but when I was reading last night, and I was at the end of Wano, and I saw her underneath in the original Wano, not the new Wano.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
oh, I was like, the old Wano.
I was just like, this bitch is Lara Croft. This bitch is literally Lara Croft, and she is doing a better job because she's not putting the world in danger, even though here's the thing about Nico Robin that is so cool. Aside from her thirst for knowledge, she also has one an incredible amount of restraint. She wants to learn all that she can, but she does it in moderation.
Mm-hmm. Robin does restrain herself a lot. Obviously, she's a older character. She's in her late 20s, maybe 30 already. Mm-hmm. And she demonstrates that really well. But I do appreciate that as mature as Robin is, as intelligent as Robin is, she does have this quirky side to her where she has like the darkest humor. And I've got to say that the way Oda kind of balances her character is magnificent.
Yes.
Makes her super smart, super intelligent, also extremely strong. But then she's got this really dark humor that creeps like most of the crew out. And then obviously a strong affinity for Chopper, which...
Yes, that's what I was about to say.
It's the cutest thing ever. Like, I love their relationship, but that Punk Hazard moment where Frankie's in Chopper's body and she's dead serious, like, don't do that. Like, almost going to kill Frankie if he continues to misuse Chopper's facial expressions.
She straight up told him, do not speak in that body.
Right. And I know that you've mostly read it, but when you do watch it in the anime, the way that it comes across is obviously extremely condescending, but hilarious because she's saying it with a straight deadpan face.
Honestly, I get it. When I saw the facial expressions, I just thought to myself, Frankie, no.
Mm-hmm. I mean, her personality, I think just, it tends to fit with like my preference and people that I get along with. That's perhaps why I'm so fond of her a little bit more than Nami. And she's just like a much more enjoyable character to follow along with throughout the story.
And really, what compels me so much about her character, and this is coming from someone who sincerely hates, you know that thing where people say, oh, you're so strong, you can overcome anything, I believe in you. That pisses me off to no end.
I get it. Like, let me be vulnerable a little bit. Let me, like, stumble a little bit. Let me go through my feels.
Yes, let me cry. Goddamn.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Robin's character, what made her come full circle, and not in not in any type of condescending way, Oda let her cry and let her find people that she could lean on, but she doesn't use them as a crutch. She's able to hold her own and keep her identity. Like, yes, she's a Straw Hat, but she's still Nico Robin at the end of the day.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that Nico Robin is like top three best written female characters in One Piece.
Absolutely, especially because all that trauma that she carried, that she still carries, because when I saw her cry in Egghead, I just thought, oh my
God. I didn't think we were going to come back to that. But then, you know, Vegapunk was like, yeah, I read all the books from O'Hara, and I was like, damn, we're going to go all the way back there. My heart can't handle this.
When I there's just something about crying from reading as opposed to watching something.
Yeah.
And when I saw her tear up and when I saw the little snot come down her nose, which for some reason she's still beautiful no matter what she does. I don't know what it is that she's doing to me.
I agree with you on that.
I don't know. I need to find my Bible because this demon child is doing something to me.
I mean, but I think the girls of, or the women of the Straw Hat, they're both fantastic in their own. I feel like we've been talking a lot about the Straw Hat / unofficial Straw Hat women. I know there's many more women that we meet throughout the other arcs.
Oh, yeah.
I know you mentioned Perona.
I sure did. I think she's really fucking funny.
She is hilarious. I enjoy her character quite a bit, especially the change that her character goes through. Because she's like in Thriller Bark, obviously being her baddie self, you know, working with Moria, and she obviously gets pawpawed somewhere else, right? That's what happened during mm-hmm. Thriller Bark. Mm-hmm. And she ends up living with Mihawk. I don't know how that worked. I don't know what the whole like living situation is like, but her being there and kind of being like a completely, I guess, different supportive character, but still like her own self. She didn't really like change like her personality or anything like that, but she made like a little change where she's there helping Mihawk. She's even helping Zoro when clearly you guys were enemies an arc and a half ago. I thought that was a very interesting thing that Oda did with her character. I wonder if he always had it planned that way, how he pawpawed her somewhere else. She was initially like a minor antagonist character, but I guess she was never inherently bad when I think about it.
No, I read somewhere, I don't know if it was in an SPS or not, but Gecko Moria was kind of like a dad to her.
Yeah, I think so.
And when you put it in that perspective, she essentially lost her parental figure and had to, she showed how versatile and adaptable she was in those years living with Mihawk.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's essentially been taken out of her element, which her element is so funny because all it is making people feel bad about themselves. That is the type of woman who, like, that comes to mind when people say, I hope that there is a woman who will step on me. Perona will be there to step on you, her and Hancock. But Perona will be there to step on you spiritually, literally to your core, make you, she will pull out, like, the first grader. And everyone, the first grader, yeah, no, let me explain. First graders will point out everything about you that is wrong, that you feel is wrong, but within yourself, I wish I would die. I'm literally a roach. Please step on me, Perona, and my hopeless life.
I mean, I will say that Oda does write a wide variety of female characters that could appeal to any individual because there are so many various types.
I realized that when Alvida lost that weight after she got her devil fruit and was literally barefoot sliding on soap or some shit. Because there are a lot of people who were getting foot fetishes from that alone.
Really?
I had to catch myself. I was like, wait a minute, Oda. Drawing those dogs a little too well.
I don't think that was his intention,
it
but
probably wasn't, but I feel like there are a lot of awakenings that a lot of people had because of One Piece.
I mean, I don't think I could speak to that from experience, but
that is fine.
I could see that though. It's considering how long One Piece has been going on, there's opportunity to reach many people at many different points in their lives.
Speaking of, you know, I did mention Hancock. I'm sorry. I know that you're not used to this type of non-structure. I am literally having such a week right now, and it's only Monday.
I am a huge fan of Hancock. Obviously, when we first met her, I was like, what's this woman's deal? And
she kicked a fucking dog.
I mean, Oda wrote a character that does not have a lot of good redeeming qualities just due to like her ego. But there's something about her that you can't help but love. And I really don't know what it is. And maybe it's just because she's like a boss girl or whatever you want to call it. Like she just eats the room up. She walks in, she eats the room up. And the way that she kind of like looks so far back that she's looking down on you. Like she looks so far up that she's looking down on you is one of the funnier parts about her. But obviously I know it's not for comedy. It's all her ego. It's all her personality. And it makes it so much more enjoyable to read her and watch her. But I know like initially when we were talking, you were like, who is this lady? She kicked a dog. She's not a vibe. But then she meets Luffy. And then all of a sudden, there's this like bushy gushy side to Boa, right? She really loves Luffy, but everybody else, she's like really hard on.
I'm going to say something. And this is a combination of, I've been doing a lot of research and I've been watching a lot of videos on One Piece. I've been doing a lot of reading on like different mindsets and, of course, reading a lot of different manga. Tell me if this gels with you.
Okay.
Do you know who Boa Hancock reminds me of to an extent?
I mean, I can't really fathom.
Makima from Chainsaw Man.
I mean, I can see it, but I also can't see it.
Tell me what because, part you can see and tell me what part you can't see.
I mean, the part about just their egos and them being like on top of everything and owning everything and basically having like no regard for time and place. Like they just literally don't care. Right? But it's the part of Makima that's basically a sadist. I don't think... You know what? I actually don't know. Is Boa a sadist?
You do. I don't think either of them are sadists.
I think they are.
Well, think of it this way. What do you remember Pochita saying about Makima toward the end of Chainsaw Man?
I don't remember. It's been a long time.
So at the end, toward the end of the first part of Chainsaw Man, Pochita says to Denji that all Makima wanted was somebody who she could have a genuine connection with, someone who she would be on equal footing with, and, you know, they would have like a reciprocal relationship.
Right.
I get that same feeling from Boa Hancock, which there are literally men and women who throw themselves at her while she has all of these huge insecurities, especially the one on her back.
Right, right.
From her time as a slave. And then Luffy comes along and Luffy's just like, sup, bitch.
I mean, yeah, Luffy has no regard or attraction to women, which I think makes him all the more appealing to Boa.
And he treats her like an equal.
No, absolutely. I can see that between Makima and Boa then. In that regard, I can see that, because Makima is some other level stuff. It's really hard for me to humanize her, but obviously she's not human. She's a devil anyway. But it's really hard for me to humanize her in many ways because of that. Because she really put Denji to the works, and I still don't love her for that.
Take that, but also take into account what she did to everyone else. Boa Hancock essentially did that same thing to everyone else by turning them to stone and saying, I fucking own you.
Yeah, to some extent.
It's just the fact that Boa Hancock treats Luffy well. Makima did not treat Denji well.
Right, right.
And we like Denji, just like right. We like Luffy. Makima
didn't treat anyone well, to be honest. It was all a manipulation game.
It was all a manipulation game, sure. But I would say that Makima had a really good poker face and on a surface level treated people well.
Yeah, absolutely. Boa is very opposite in that regard. She literally undermines every single person she comes across except for Luffy and her sisters.
Do you remember Freddie Mercury's hit song, Mr. Bad Guy?
Absolutely not.
There's a point in the song where he says, I can ruin people's lives. Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Bad Guy, they're all afraid of me. That's them, except replace they're afraid of me with they're in love with me.
I mean, yes, that's her whole devil fruit ability. So, I mean, she has the looks for it. She has the charm for it. So why not use it to your advantage? That's devil fruits for you, right? They all have these weird rules, and you have to leverage them.
You do, but I will say she... Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I put that parallel out there to say that I initially did not like Boa Hancock because I didn't see the humanity in her.
Mm-hmm.
But the more that I researched different types of mentalities and the more that I thought about what she was going through as an insecurity,
yes,
I realized she's actually a very amazing character.
Yeah, I mean, her time as a slave, it's kind of embedded in her character and how she treats other people to some extent. And obviously, these are layers of guards that she's built on top of herself after the experience her and her sisters had. And it's very easy to, I mean, there's a lot of characters in One Piece where you meet them and it's like, you know, I kind of like you, but I don't know if I really like you. There's something weird about you, something fishy about you. And then you get their backstory and it's like, wow, there's a whole layer of complexity to this person. Oda really excels at backstories. I think he's one of the mangaka that makes one of the best backstories in anything I've ever watched or read. And he does that exceptionally well when it comes to characters like Boa. He introduces them. They have really not so great redeeming qualities. You think they're not great people. You don't love them. And then he's like, bam, here's a backstory. Let me know how you feel.
And really, by the end of, what is it, the Amazon Lily? Is that an arc or is that just the island?
I mean, I guess it is an arc. It's like a sub arc, right? Because it leads... Dude, there's so many arcs. There's sagas, there's arcs, there's sub arcs. One Piece is too big to kind of like contain.
Well, the longer that I stuck around and was reading and saw more of Boa Hancock, I said, okay, I gotta give her a pass. As soon as I read Slave, I was like, fuck, I have to give up the ghost. She's fine. She can sing Fishmen spirituals and she can probably cook collard greens. She's fine with me.
I mean, but yeah, she's a really interesting character to just like enjoy in the story, just because she does have a lot more murkiness to her. And I think you're reading like an egghead, like Did Blackbeard show up at her island already?
Yeah, and choked her, which I don't think she's into.
No, she's definitely not into that. But yeah, the way, obviously, the way that Boa also defends her island and like her family and the people that live there, it also speaks to how much she is willing to protect. Yes, she comes off very egotistical and very vain, but we do know that she is a very caring individual.
And I love her for it. Not as much as the others, but I do have an affinity for Boa Hancock now, and I feel like Oda is the only person who's gonna make me feel that way about her. Can you remind me what Rayleigh's wife's name is? Because she is so cool.
I think it's Shockey.
It is. It is Shockey.
Yes. I mean, we get introduced to her character, but I feel like we don't get a lot of context to her. Obviously, I know that she used to be like an Amazonian, and then she fell in love with Rayleigh, left the island to go be with him.
I just think she's really cool. Like,
She's cool vibes. She
she's cool
has like
vibes. I mean,
more like an older version of Robin. Like if Robin was like in her 50s and 60s. I actually don't know how old Shockey is, but age is deceiving in One Piece. If you look at Big Mom, I think she's like in her 60s.
yeah, she had like almost a kid a year. Did she have like 49 kids or something?
I don't remember the exact count, but yes, Big Mom has a lot of kids.
Maybe it was 45.
I don't know.
I feel like there have, I feel like there are more Big Mom children than there have been presidents of the United States.
That could be accurate.
That could be accurate.
Actually, while we're on the topic of Big Mom, I know we're not fond of her to an extent because she ate her children. She ate some of her children. She ate her husband's, that's for sure. And ate her childhood,
Family,
buddies.
yeah.
Yes, her family. So obviously there's a lot of complexity to Big Mom, but I do enjoy Big Mom because there is so much complexity to her. Obviously, we don't really know her origin. There's got to be something special about her because there's no way that she's that big for no reason. And I think like Big Mom being like one of the bigger villains in One Piece as a woman, like I feel like speaks volumes. I felt like she was, even though Kaido was like endurance level was so much higher, I felt like Big Mom was just so much scarier and menacing.
Oh, absolutely, because she can control lightning and weather and shit, and she can put
She
her
can control souls. What are you talking about?
entire soul. And also, I meant to apologize. I did not watch the episodes like you told me to of
Oh, the musical
the
episodes?
musical episodes,
I
but
mean, you could go back to it. You're almost done or caught up, let's say. I can't say done. You're almost caught up in the manga, so you have time now unless you're planning on picking up another manga.
I don't know.
But
Oh boy.
Big Mom, I think was a very like interesting character that Oda created as an antagonist. Like we've had some like minor female antagonists like here and there, like
Miss
Monet.
Tuesday.
I mean, yes, but like Monet from Punk Hazard. There's got to be more characters, but they're literally like escaping my memory. But Big Mom was like that menacing character that kind of like really made you scared for people's lives, especially in Whole Cake. The way her hunger pangs kicked in and she just became a whole savage. I mean, what kind of process did Oda have to go through to write Big Mom as a character? Like her childhood story, the fact that she used to be part of the Rocks Pirates with Kaido and Whitebeard. Like there's just so much lore to Big Mom.
She is an impressive specimen, I will say that much.
And what she's been able to accomplish Like that whole, those islands are all hers versus all of the other Yonko, especially not the greater Yonko, all of the other Yonko, like Kaido, he went and he like took Wano. Wano wasn't his to begin with. He took Wano. But Big Mom was like, you know what? I'm going to create my own kingdom. And she built Whole Cake Island and all the different little sweets islands. And then she still goes on to proceed to acquire territories on top of that. Like Fishman Island used to be a part of her territory before Luffy came in and kicked ass and said, this is mine now. But I feel like her as a character, aside from all of the craziness that she does and the menacing actions that she brings to One Piece as an antagonist, she's extremely well accomplished for a pirate and was really like, you could even say that she probably had one of the greatest potentials for being king of the pirates.
I don't think she's out of the running.
You don't think so?
I don't think she's dead.
I mean, look, the end of Wano was very murky because the way that both Kaido and Big Mom dropped into the lava was very, like, ambiguous. Like, is it clear? Is it not clear? And then also, after we thought we were done with Big Mom and she followed them all the way to Wano, like, talk about persistent, I was like, man, I don't really know if she's dead either. So I get it. I feel similar to an extent, but at the same time, they fell into lava.
Okay.
You think they could come back from that?
It's One Piece, Mel.
I mean, that's very true. I mean, anything can happen. But in my brain, I'm just like, you know what? I'm done with the both of you, both Kaido and Big Mom. If Big Mom came back to the story, I would have a full-on heart attack.
There's literally a guy who, like, can get bird feet and light people on fire. Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's true. But look, I do think that, like, the way he wrote her as an antagonist was wonderful. He made her menacing. He made her accomplished. Like, there was no way, like, if Luffy hadn't intervened, I think she could have gotten and maybe could have been king of the pirates at some point.
I still don't think she's out of the run. I think she's going to come back. I'm not saying she's going to be king of the pirates, but we have not seen the last of that woman.
She'll come back just in time for Elbaf because of her obsession with the giants, right?
That would be really nice, actually. Also, I really like her daughter Pudding.
Pudding.
I like Pudding.
She's another character that you thought she was bad, like kind of like Perona. You thought she was bad and a minor antagonist, but not really. She's just been manipulated by her mother her entire life. And she just developed this really, like, not so cute personality because of that. And Big Mom does not show any of her kids affection. I think we got that thoroughly in the story, in the arc of Whole Cake. Like, the way all of her kids behave, they're obviously all afraid of her too. I think the only true, true loyal child is Perro Sparrow, and everyone hates him. But yeah, she like really turned around on us, and the way that she helped Sanji out, but then kind of cut that piece out of his memory, that was a beautiful self-sacrificing moment.
Yeah, because he definitely would have stayed.
Yes, he would have, but she was like, nah, you gotta go, bro. You got to go. We're gonna deal with the damage here once you guys are done.
Actually, what is his name? Perro Sparrow? That reminds me. So the first One Piece centric episode that I ever did on this podcast was for One Piece Film Red. Uda is the shit.
Yeah. Like, you know what's really funny? I think Oda created the story of Film Red because he said he wanted to draw a really, like, cute female character. I can't remember if he really wanted to do it as an antagonist, because I was like, wait, Big Mom's a big antagonist in One Piece. But his whole reasoning for wanting to create Film Red is that he really wanted to create like a cute female character. Like he really wanted to draw like a main character like that. So he created Uta in Film Red. But he added a lot of lore to her. And it that movie was lots of fun, though. Like Uta started out as this like really cute pop star idol, like you were vibing with her, but then out of nowhere things just got like really really dark and it's like, wow, Uta, why are we going down this path? What's the reason for this?
I just have an affinity for Otto as well. She did a really great cover of Kickback.
Oh yeah, she's the singing voice for Uta.
Yes, and she does such an amazing job. But the one thing that I didn't like, and this is obviously, I mean, this entire episode is spoiler. I did not, I wish that she was super canon and that she wasn't dead.
Oh, I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to write a canon story, like that's a movie, how can you really bring them into the main storyline without acknowledging that you've created massive plot holes? I don't think Oda could have done that. As masterful as he is with story writing, I don't think fans would have accepted just writing her into the main story like that.
I think you're right,
because Shanks just being absent for all those years and us not getting like a single glimpse of her, and then also the fact that there's a lot of lore to Shanks's backstory which we still don't have like full knowledge on. I don't know. I feel like we would be really remiss if Oda decided to make her a part of the storyline randomly after that movie, just like plug her in.
Though I think they did try to do some, didn't they try to do some stuff with like a special or two in the anime?
They did like 3-episode specials to kind of like show Uta's connection to Luffy as a kid, which is another thing too. It's like we got Luffy's whole like childhood backstory when Ace died with Sabo and Ace and stuff like that. And yes, it was just a small segment within Luffy's childhood because we still don't know who Luffy's mom is, but it's like where do you like plug that in? Why didn't we see that earlier? So it starts to create like some questions. Like you start to ask more questions if he decided to plug that in into like the actual main storyline. Well, it's part of the main storyline, let me not say that, but if he decided to implement that in the series.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to see more of her, because I think he did. Well, not did Oda write Film Red? Or
I mean, I think he created the characters and he was very involved in like the production and the storytelling and the story writing for Film Red. I don't think it was like spun up out of nowhere. Oda had an idea, they created it. He had heavy influence in Film Red.
Well, you make several valid points, so I rescind my comment. I don't want Uta in the main continuity. But if they make a Film Red 2, which I know they won't, and they find a way to bring her ass back,
I don't think we'll be getting that, unfortunately. But hopefully, if we get, you know, an actual backstory on Shanks, we could see her in the backstory.
Oh, yeah. Don't give me hope.
I mean, this is obviously speculation, but that would be nice, right?
It would be nice. So, gosh, how do I say this without sounding like a terrible person? I'll tell you a story. So at the place where I work, which you know a lot about, I had a conversation with a coworker, which she asked me straight out. She's like, "Are you gay?" And I was like, "No." And she said, "Why do you sound disappointed about that?" And I said, all of the elements are there. I said, "God just did not flip the switch." And she was like, oh. And then I met Kiku, and now I'm just like, okay. All right, I can't beat the allegations.
I mean,
That's just one more.
Kiko is another one of those. You could just chalk her up to like VV and Bon Clay levels. You can't hate Kiku.
You
And her
can't hate Kiku.
introduction was, it's kind of funny because she obviously, yes, is a woman, but Zoro is like sensing her out, and she's like, oh, what should we do? What should we do? Should we run? And she's kind of trying to like fill Zoro and Luffy out too, because she doesn't know if she could trust them. And Zoro just looks at her and he's just like, what are you talking about? You're strong. We could deal with this. It was like a very funny moment because Kiku is like really timid a little bit to some
Yes,
extent.
yes.
And I think Zoro kind of like sussed her out and was like, why are you acting like this? Like, I know you could hold your own.
And you know what I really like about Kiku's character, like all jokes aside, and this is from a writing standpoint. Well, first from a character design standpoint. I mean, having been born male, of course, Oda couldn't draw her with huge titties like he does. But she's still like probably the most beautiful woman in One Piece.
She's super beautiful.
Super
Yeah,
beautiful.
she's super beautiful. Honestly, I was really confused when Oda was like, yeah, Kiku was born male. I was like, what do you mean? I don't understand.
All I'm saying is, look. If that's being gay, I don't want to be straight. But what I really like about it, because I've heard a lot of criticisms about Oda and characters who don't fit into, what is it, gender conventions, or I forget what it is that they say, but basically people who aren't heteronormative, is that what it's called?
Yes, I think
Cis
so.
cisgendered too.
Yes. Because I think the introduction of Ivankov was a big shocker for people.
Yeah, and there
Yeah.
are people who think he didn't handle it well.
Yes. It was very like, Oda, what are you trying to say here? What are you trying to do here? What kind of stereotypes are you trying to create?
And then he does this perfectly by introducing Kiku and Yamato because, and here's my absolute favorite thing. This is why I can't be mad at Oda about anything right now. They all they have to do is say, I'm a man or I'm a woman once, and they're just like, okay, cool.
I mean, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
at the end of the arc of the Wano arc, which is the Wano saga, which I don't particularly understand, but okay. The Wano saga was only the Wano arc. Back to Kiku. Kiku is just, look, I'm a simple man. The only rules that I have for any relationship, apparently my standards are low. I said I just want to be treated with kindness and respect, and you know, have a woman who respects my boundaries and is very patient. But I feel like Kiku checks all those boxes, so I mean, Botan and I are never getting a divorce, but if I moved into the One Piece universe, me and Kiku are getting hitched. That's all there is to
I mean,
that.
that's a wonderful choice. I think most people probably would feel the same.
I'm glad that you say that because, like, why is she so perfect?
I mean, she is. She absolutely is. It
There's
makes
no.
me sad when her arm got cut off and her brother died. I was like, damn.
I
I
mean,
f I feel like I feel like she had some of the biggest L's in Wano.
and still came out on top.
Yeah, she made it out alive. I'm happy for that because if Oda decides to also kill her off, I would be extremely sad.
I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah,
I really don't.
But there's a large plethora of female characters in One Piece. It's kind of hard for us to iterate like every single one just because there's so many different arcs.
No, we literally got to all the ones I wanted to talk about.
Okay, that's good. I feel like I had one more floating in my head somewhere. No, Carrot.
Oh God, I love that little rabbit thing.
Right? See, all right, so if this is a last mention, if we don't talk about any other characters, Carrot was like a very fun surprise character.
Yeah.
When we went to Zoe, obviously going to Zoe was a whole mystical thing. We got introduced to Minx. We probably finally understood where Beppo came from, because you know he was the only Zoe like race that the only mink that we had been introduced into the story so far. Then we get introduced to all the minks, and then comes Carrot, and then Carrot joining them on their trip to Whole Cake was stellar. Like the way that she's carrying Pedro's will after he died in Whole Cake, her Sulong form, just magnificent. Carrot was like an MVP in Whole Cake. And then she still showed up to Wano to help out and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And even though she couldn't get the job done, understandably so, she was under a lot of emotional distress. And Wanda pitched in, helped her out, because Perro Sparrow is not an easy fight. So I thoroughly understand that. I felt like Carrot's character really like showed up in so many different ways, like her being Pedro's apprentice, her always wanting to like leave Zoe and go on an adventure of her own. She kind of felt like it was her time. And then as of recently, right, you were able to see that chapter where they asked Carrot to become the next like the ruler of Zoe.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, Oda really wrote like a very masterful, interesting character here. She's very multifaceted. She's like really empathetic, but also extremely strong. She's like really cute and like funny. Like she's a very well-rounded character.
Yes, and one who's definitely not chomping at the bits or chomping at the carrot.
But that's one that was escaping me for a moment. I think when we were talking about Whole Cake, I was like, wait, there was that time where we had Carrots along with us for a long time too.
I will say, this is the last one I'm going to talk about though, Shirahoshi. I love Shirahoshi so much.
Shirahoshi was hard to start with. Just a little bit hard to start with. Like, okay, kind of like,
imagine like not being able to go outside.
No, I get it. And she's been sheltered all of her life. So like, it's very understandable why her character is the way that she is. I'm not saying that like there's no reasoning for that. And I think like Oda wrote her with that intention to convey that she was sheltered all of her life, but she does have like these abilities, and Luffy does aid in that. Luffy aids in a lot of senses, in many direct and indirect ways with a lot of the characters that we've talked about.
There's one thing that I really super appreciate about Shirahoshi, though. Well, a few things. One, I love crybaby characters. Not like Takemichi from Tokyo Revengers. I don't like him. But crybaby characters are some of my favorites, probably because I am a crybaby. I cry a lot. I'm very sensitive. If you look at me, like, with your eyelid slightly down, like, just this amount, I will start crying. I see you're trying to do it right now. Don't, please, please.
No, so, this is just my natural, like, sad face.
I was going to say, I can't handle that right now. But what I really think is unique about Shirahoshi is that wasn't that part of One Piece on the manga called New World?
Are you referring to like a chapter name or like the part of the world?
The part of the world, and if you look on the cover of One Piece, which you know you read on the Shonen Jump app, right?
No, I read on the Manga Plus app, but I started reading in Whole Cake. I watched the anime all the way to like Whole Cake first, and then I picked up the manga from there.
I see. Well, I think that it was called New World because that's where they were going. You know, everyone was saying,
yeah, the New World.
New World.
Right. Because the
oh, go ahead.
The part before the New World, I think, is called like Paradise. So it's Paradise, then the other half is New World.
So you literally have the parallel of the Straw Hats going into the New World, but then you have Shirahoshi going into a New World, which is a New World after a New World, because she gets to experience her own kingdom without having to worry about getting sniped from thousands of miles away from some dude who can just throw ships at her. And then next thing you know, she's at the Reverie less than a month later.
Yeah. That was a very like proud development for Shirahoshi going to the Reverie, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, it's also been a while since I've watched Fishman. There was kind of like this idea of not wanting to go to the surface for a clear reason, because of slavery and oppression of the fishmen and the discrimination. And Shirahoshi shared that similar type of fear to an extent, but at the same time wanted to continue the dream that her mom had, that she died trying to like make happen.
And she can talk to sea monsters and shit.
I mean, yes, she is Poseidon.
I stopped watching the anime probably right before they picked Chopper up.
Really?
Or right after. I don't know. After, because the baddest bitch in all of One Piece, Doctorine, I had to see her animated.
That's fair.
But
that's fair. That lady's like 100 years old.
Hey, look,
she looks great still.
She does.
Don't understand how. Don't understand.
I mean, she's a doctor.
Yes, she is. I just, the way age works in One Piece, I will never understand. No one looks their age. No one looks, this is One Piece. That's all I have to say. This is One Piece.
Okay, I see it's late. You go to bed at 10, don't you?
Yes.
Yes, you poor thing. I have just been keeping you. All right, this is where we're calling it. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
If you're still here, thank you so much. I wanted to give a brief afterword, just giving a few of my final thoughts regarding One Piece. So, first off, thank you all for listening to this episode. It was wonderful having Mel on. Mel is an absolute master of One Piece. I mean, the way that she analyzes things is so incredible. I was so lucky to have her on for this episode. I want to go a little bit further into a few of the characters that meant a lot to me. So jokes aside, Kiku, while I of course think that Kiku is beautiful, yes, and yes, she is tall, taller than me, so she can give me uppies, which at 6'3", I would really appreciate. I have this affinity for Kiku for the simple fact that, yes, she is tough as nails, but also extremely elegant and devoted. But what makes her so incredible to me is that she basically came from nothing. And because of her love for Odin, her family, so to speak, she uses that power. She uses the power of love for her comrades and, of course, for Odin to grow stronger. And really, she could have done anything else, but she chose to become a fighter. She chose to follow and forge her own conviction. And seeing that come into play, seeing how her love for Odin turned into a love for her country, and seeing how she was willing to fight for that, but not just for that, but for her, because she views the country as an extension of her, or vice versa. I just think that that makes Boar such a powerful character on multiple levels, because that sense of agency that isn't lost upon her is just beautiful to see. And really just, I am so impressed. One, that Oda broke out of the whole not really knowing how to handle gender, to giving the utmost respect and making such a wonderful born as male, transition to female character. Like, there's just so much care put into Kiku's character, where even though she's not in the spotlight for most of Wano, she's there. She is there the entire time, but the focus is hardly ever on her. She's still always a major player, and her contribution is never downplayed. And she does contribute a lot on the side, and she's not afraid, just like Robin, to be vulnerable and to have such depth and a wide spectrum of emotions that, despite being a samurai, she is able to feel just like the rest of them. And I just think that's amazing. I also, when I say that Doctorine is the baddest bitch in all of One Piece, she literally adopted the raccoon dog that killed her foolish friend because she saw how much Chopper was hurting and wanted to see her friend's dream come true, because to an extent that was also her dream. She just wants to save people. She wants to use her talents and use what she's learned to contribute to society and to a country that desperately needs her. And it doesn't matter what criticisms come her way. She is also really tough, and she makes no qualms about really anything. She says whatever she wants, she does whatever she wants, but no matter what, she is just a shining example of how you can be so badass, but you can also just be so inherently good on so many levels. And the fact that she was willing to do what she did for Chopper, and for the Straw Hats as a whole, who were absolute strangers to her, they were not from the kingdom that she lived in. Honestly, thanks to Vivi, with her diplomatic self and what she had learned during her time as royalty, was able to make Luffy a better captain, which in turn made Doctorine treat them and got them Chopper, who is just an absolute precious being, who Robin adores. And I love that Robin can be so cute, that Robin can be so cool and be so stoic yet funny, and also have an affinity for cute things and make no qualms about it. And finally, one last thing that I just really want to point out. Nami pulled one of the biggest power moves in all of Wano, that entire arc, saga, whatever you want to call it. Oh my god, she knocked a dinosaur out because the dinosaur hit a kid. And it was one of the most striking panels I had ever seen in my entire One Piece journey. So those are just a few thoughts that I hat kind of floating in the back of my head, but I wasn't able to get out, but they were very important to me, so I wanted to make sure I was able to say them and convey them to you, because these characters are deep, and if they aren't deep, then they are fun to be around, like Perona. And I love One Piece, man. And thank you so much, Mel, for sticking with me during my One Piece journey, because it's been a lot of fun and it's been a bonding point for us. So just great, great all around. And just so you guys know, what you're getting is a shortened version of the longer version that is available on Patreon. And really, the longer version is just wild and insane for several reasons. It devolves into a conversation, which is really just a rant from me about Sonic the Hedgehog for a solid 5 to 10 minutes. And there are just a lot of jokes and things that don't make sense, but it's a lot of fun. So if you want to check out the full episode, then do so on my Patreon. And if you want to support what it is that I'm doing, definitely support the Patreon. And also, you can follow me on Instagram at AnimeAlphaGoat. And you can follow Mel on Instagram at It'sAnnieMel. And she also has a phenomenal YouTube channel that you should check out. That's all for me. I hope that you all take care. And with that, I am out.